Welcome to the holiday edition of the Phys Ed podcast. We're taking a break during the holiday season. However, over the coming weeks, we're going to be revisiting past episodes that were highly popular and ones that we know are definitely worth checking out. So, in the meantime, if you happen to be in Sydney in January, it'd be awesome if you caught up with us over a series of sites where we're running holiday programs for the kids. We'll be at Centennial Parklands, Sydney Olympic Park, Australian Botanic Garden in Mount Annan, and many more. Just jump onto the Phys Ed website and you can just check under the holiday tab. You'll find more information there. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome to another Physics Ed podcast. This week we are looking at the National Youth Science Forum. This is a group that's been working very, very hard for Year 12 students across the country since 1984 with their residential STEM programs. Now, first up is Dr. Tim Smith, who's working with Swinburne University to create a new tertiary course around engineering and innovation. Let's take a listen.
This is the Physics Ed podcast.
Tim Smith, welcome to the Physics Ed podcast.
Thanks very much, Ben.
Hey, thanks very much for jumping on board, especially the week after National Science Week. I hear it was quite busy for you as well.
Yeah, that's right. It's always a busy time of year, but when you're working in the university sector, it comes right around the start of semester two. So things are crazy enough already, and then you dump Science Week on top of it. It gets pretty fun.
Yeah, you've got research to write, you've got grants to get, you've got students to look after.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know the feeling. And as I was saying just prior to this recording, we were flat out last week. We did 140 shows across Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney and Canberra. And I think Science Week is really Science Month as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, as it should be.
Exactly right. Hey, thanks for jumping on board the podcast. Look, the reason we're being, in case listeners are wondering, Tim has been referred to as from the National Youth Science Forum, and some people may not know what NYSF is all about, but Tim certainly does know. Tim, how did you get involved with NYSF?
Well, for those that don't know, the NYSF is a two-week residential program to introduce students starting year 12, so it's run in January, to what working as a scientist or an engineer would be like. And so I got introduced to the NYSF through my high school physics teacher, actually. When I was in year 11, he tapped me on the shoulder and said, "This is something that I think would be really good for you. You should consider applying." At the time, I didn't think like it would be something that I would enjoy, to be perfectly honest, but I put in an application anyway and was lucky enough to be accepted, and then went on and had some of the best weeks of my life. So yeah.
It's funny how mentors do that. They throw you in the deep and say, good luck with that, and and you're like, I don't even know if this is for me. That's awesome. Okay, so you applied, not quite sure if you want to do it, and then it became like one of the best things that you ever did. So
yep.
I guess I just have to ask straight up, why? Why was it like one of the best fortnights you ever had?
For a couple of reasons, actually. I mean, I think if you'd asked me why I would have said that, you know, straight afterwards, I would have said it's the people that you meet, the spending 2 weeks with like-minded students from all around Australia, you know, you form some lasting friendships there. So there's that, you know, huge social aspect. But, you know, sort of reflecting on it now, 15 years later, I'm showing my age,
it
really set me up for, deciding what it was that I wanted to do as a university course, and then, you know, throughout the rest of my career, it really sort of shaped my career progression from that point.
Wow. So 15 years down the track, you can look back and go, as a year 11 student, you apply, you go to this thing in the summer break, and in 2 weeks you are able to work out what you did love and what you don't love. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was a fantastic opportunity to be exposed to so many different sort of scientific disciplines and get some real sort of hands-on experience as to what working as a scientist is actually like, because I don't think that's definitely not taught in high schools. Not that you can really teach that, but it's not an opportunity that most people get. So it was a fantastic opportunity to really sort of understand what I could be doing with the rest of my life.
Well, I really want to find out a bit more about this because, look, we've run into the National Youth Science Forum through an accelerator through PwC, and I was at an alumni event a couple of months ago, and hearing about all the what happens to people after the fact was awesome. But trying to get a picture of, like, just how that two-week period sounds fairly full-on by the sound of it. I mean, what organization did you visit? What did you get to do?
Oh, well, I will preface everything I'm about to say with this was 15 years ago, so
of course,
no doubt the program's changed a little bit since my time there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I went through the NYSF, I was in session A, so there were two-week sessions that were run at that time. I think there's three now, which just goes to show how popular this has got. But within that session, there were about 150 other students there, and you were split up into groups based on what you thought you might want to do in the future. So there was actually an exercise. Once you got accepted, they asked you to actually find a job in the local paper that was being advertised that you thought you might want.
Do you remember what you wanted at the time?
I actually wanted to be a doctor at that point in time. So they did say that it had to be in science or engineering. It couldn't be in medicine. So I found something that was in the biomedical field. I can't remember exactly what the job was. But off the back of that, I got put into the group called Darwin, so obviously named after Charles Darwin,
yep.
Which was, so all the places that we got to visit in the 2 weeks were around sort of biology and biomedical science. So we went to the entomology lab at ANU, so looked at a whole bunch of different insects. We went to their electron microscopy facilities. There was a guy from the Australian Federal Police that came to talk to us about forensics. A whole host of, like, a real range of different experiences. And you know, I was lucky enough to go back to the NYSF for two years after my time there as a student, as a staff member, so I got to know a little bit about how the program is actually set up and run. And I know that they put a lot of time and effort in sort of curating these experiences to make them not only as relevant to the students, but also as diverse as possible.
Absolutely, and they've pulled in a bunch of experts all together in a couple of week period. I mean, that's going to be difficult to handle with everyone's timetables and schedules being what they are. That's,
Yeah, it's a huge logistics feat. But when you're there as a student, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like the whole thing is just seamless and runs like clockwork. It's amazing what they do.
Well, rolling forward, I mean, you did say that, and this was 15 years for you, and obviously you've had somewhat of a career now. You're a molecular biologist, yeah?
That is my formal training, but I don't actually work in that field anymore.
Oh, what do you do now?
So I'm currently the operations manager for the Engineering Practice Academy at Swinburne University in Melbourne. So this is a new venture for Swinburne. It's taking its first students next year in 2018. So it's an undergraduate 4-year honours level engineering degree, but our unique selling point is that in our degree, you will not attend a single lecture, you will not sit a single exam. All of your teaching and learning will be done by doing real industry projects for real clients from day one of the degree right through to the end of your fourth year.
Why does it have a feeling you're going to be oversubscribed with that?
As I said when I applied for this job, I said if this had been available for when I was going into undergrad, I probably would have studied engineering. It sounds like a fantastic way to spend 4 years and come out at the end of it with a qualification.
So you've had a good hand in what that syllabus is going to be like, yeah, by the sound of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
So, I mean, I'm not an engineer by training. I am a molecular biologist, but my role is more on the delivery side. We've got quite a good academic staff here that have put together the actual curriculum, and it's just my job to help them deliver that in this sort of unique way. But we're a very collaborative team, so everyone pitches in where they can.
Well, how many places are going to go for that? Like, how many are going to open up for that first year?
Look, the first year intake is going to be quite small. I don't think we've settled on a number yet, but we're constrained a little bit by physical space at the moment, and also a few other factors. But this is something that the university is committed to, and so it will scale quite quickly after its first initial intake. You know, if we have our way, the university will be accepting the same number of students into this course as they do into the traditional engineering degree within about 5 years.
I bet. And I was just sort of thinking about contrasting that against what NYSF does, because it's got a very clear alumni. I'd imagine that you'd be great to be able to create, you know, from the startup, an interesting alumni group as they go through their degree and move on to their careers. I'm interested to see where people go.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right.
Oh, that's awesome. So it's, I guess, thinking about this, I mean, what made you jump into science in the first place? Like, year 11, your teacher picks you out going, you know what, this might be for you. But I'm guessing science for you surely didn't start in year 11 in your head, or maybe it did. I don't know.
No, I mean, I've always been STEM inclined, I guess you could say. You know, I can remember right back when I was very, very young. I don't want to put an age, I can't remember, but you know, doing things like taking apart my alarm clock just to see how it worked and stuff like that, and then not being able to put it back together and getting into lots of trouble for my parents.
That is actually a fantastic thing. And by the way, listeners, if you do pull apart machines and put them back together, just make sure they're not anything to do with capacitors or anything that can store charge in like TVs and things. But I must say, I have clear memories of doing exactly that with screwdrivers and spanners and things, pulling apart old, and this is showing my age, but old VCR recorders, old video recorders and things that, you know, fax machines and things. And the key was, once you pull it apart, we had to swap groups and then try and put the thing back together that the other group pulled apart, which is nasty, but made you have to think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, that's doing that kind of stuff. It's not something that you really think about at the time, but looking back on it, it definitely shows that I've always had some sort of interest in STEM. And then, you know, I was lucky enough through my primary and high school education to have access to some fantastic science teachers who sort of cultivated that innate curiosity about the world and how it works, and ultimately, you know, directing me towards applying for the NYSF, which kind of showed me exactly what working as a scientist can actually be like.
Yeah, this has been a recurring theme with all of our guests that have all said at some point in time, someone sparked the curiosity and grew them and grew them, went from there. And actually it makes me think about the schools, your feeder schools that come into NYSF, and those students that then leave NYSF to enter university to eventually come across, for example, your course. I mean, what sort of advice, if you got to, you know, wave a magic wand and say, like, this is what I would love the curriculum or whatever to look like from primary to high school, so that my students who arrive in a tertiary sector kind of know how STEM actually works. What are the sort of things that, without going into too much detail, I suppose, but what are the broad ideas that you'd love students to kind of get by the time they enter university in first year?
That's a really good question. I mean, I guess from my perspective, you know, there's, especially in the last, say, 5 years, there's been quite, I would say, a heavy emphasis on STEM education, particularly in the high school sector. There's, you know, you can't really pick up a newspaper these days without seeing some report about how STEM jobs will be the jobs of the future, and that, you know, everyone working in any discipline will need to have some level of STEM literacy.
Yep.
I think that's probably very true, but in order for that to actually happen, we're going to need to do a lot better job of thinking about what it is we're actually teaching in high school. So, I mean, I can remember going in first year chemistry, my lecturer stood up and said, everything that you've learnt about molecules in high school is wrong. I'm going to reteach it to you in this first week. Because, you know, in high school chemistry, and look, again, maybe things are different now. This is going back 15 years, but, you know, we learned about electrons having discrete orbitals and they move through them when you add energy, and when they come down, that's when you get luminescence and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Which is true to a certain extent, but it's not actually how things work in the real world, and it's much more complicated and messy.
And very fuzzy.
I can understand the desire to simplify things for students in high school. You know, they only need to know so much. But at the same time, what is the point of teaching people something that's not necessarily true just for the sake of teaching them that? Like, if we can't come up with a way of teaching 16-year-olds how electrons actually work. Why are we teaching them this sort of half-truth about it?
Well, this is a good conversation I had with some awesome primary STEM educators, some gifted and talented people. Basically, they take gifted and talented opportunity classes together in year 5 and 6, and these are from a number of schools, and they accelerate them in STEM understanding. And nearly everyone to a T just says, just change your language, but be true to the science. And it seems to me that you're pretty much the same way.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the other thing that I would stress about STEM education is teaching students what they need to know in order to operate effectively in society at the moment. So, I mean, as part of this course that we're developing here at Swinburne, we're very concerned about teaching students engineering that is relevant to what we call 21st century engineering practice.
Yeah,
as opposed to 20th century engineering practice. So there's a lot of stuff now that, you know, that all universities around Australia, all 36 universities that teach engineering are teaching students because that's what you've always taught engineering students. But, I mean, if you go out into the real world, into the workforce, and you ask any practicing engineer, when was the last time you solved a triple integral by hand, they would say, probably first year of my engineering degree, because, you know, we're teaching them how to do really complicated calculus just for the sake of that's what our lecturer, you know, I as a lecturer, I learnt that when I was in engineering, so they need to know it. And, I mean, yes, students need to know sort of calculus fundamentals and how to actually do those calculations, but using 21st century tools. So there are things called calculators these days that I mean, if I was a practicing engineer and I had to, you know, solve that equation and I pulled out a pen and paper, I'd get fired because I'm wasting the time of my employer and by extension their money, because I'm doing work that could easily be done in half a second using modern tools.
So if you had like a bunch of year 12s in front of you and you had to describe the working life of a scientist in a university or out in industry, you know, you had like only a couple of minutes to describe it, what would you say that is what it's really like to work as a scientist? What are the sort of tasks you actually do on a day-to-day basis?
Working as a scientist is, or even an engineer, it's problem solving. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're thinking about the world and you know, how it works, and trying to come up with either a theory as to why it works that way, or solution's probably not the right word, but a way of making it work in a different way or a way that is more aligned with what you need it to do. There's this sort of perception that STEM jobs are all about maths and it's all about you have to be really smart to do them. That's not true. There is a level of maths and there is, I don't want to say there's a level of intellect you need to do STEM jobs. I don't think that's true. There is definitely a way of thinking that you need to be able to perform to be successful in a STEM career, but it's not, you know, only the brightest people in the world are successful scientists and engineers. It's just people that have mastered a particular skill, which is logical thinking, and that's something that anyone can do with a little bit of practice.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of that quote. I think even Albert Einstein says, like, I have no special talent, I'm only passionately curious, which if I hope it was attributed to him. I mean, I know lots of people just throw quotes onto his face these days and go, he really said this. But, I mean, at least it resounds a lot with what you're saying.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So if you had to give some advice to a high school admin team, to a science team that really wants to accelerate their students, and, you know, it would be great, obviously, going to something like the National Youth Science Forum or whatever, but broadly as a whole, what would you suggest to them so they can look after their kids?
Teach them how to think, not what to think. So the danger, and I mean, I was a tutor at university, you know, helping students get through first and second year biology subjects. So, I mean, I speak from a little bit of experience, and there is a tendency in STEM subjects, because there is an element of rote learning, like you just need to know certain things. So there is a tendency to just fall back on that and just teach what it is that students need to know. But that's not preparing students for work in STEM fields. So teach them how to think about things, teach them how to find the answers that they need, and worry less about teaching them the rote stuff. So an example I always like to draw on is in my second year biochemistry class at university, we had to learn how to draw all the molecules involved in the citric acid cycle. Now, that's that's patently ridiculous because you can look that up on the internet in 30 seconds if you really needed to know what they looked like.
Oh, I had to do it too.
Yeah, understanding the citric acid cycle and how it works, that's important.
Good old
understanding
Krebs.
Sorry? The Krebs again.
Good old Krebs.
That's right. And, you know, and understanding how you would find or where you would find the information you need if you needed to dig deeper into it, and understanding how that cycle impacts everything else that goes on within the workings of a cell. But actually having to draw out every single molecule is... I don't want to say this because the lecturer was a really nice guy, but it's just lazy teaching because it's a very that's a very easy exam question to write and to mark, but it doesn't actually teach students anything.
It's called, yeah, I think they call it busy work. Just get them busy. Yeah. They look busy. That's right. They must be learning.
Exactly.
Mind you, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find modern teachers thinking about that rote thinking, which is good news. I mean, I think education very much is something that gets people get – there's all sorts of opinions around and people get pulled left, right and center. But the core group of teachers around is that everyone gets that no one should be doing it that way anymore, which is really good news to see.
No. Well, that is good to hear. But, I mean, I guess the problem is that – If you're really serious about educating, it's about educating individuals rather than groups. And I mean, just it's always difficult to sort of keep that in the top of your mind. And it's very easy to fall back into, well, I taught it this way last year and it seemed to work, so I'll do it again this way. And that's a slippery slope to start going down. Yeah.
And the good thing is that you're now in charge effectively of putting in a tertiary curriculum where you can do what you want. You must be loving it.
Okay. Yes. Well. Yeah. Our curriculum is very, very different, and to a certain extent, will be guided a lot by the types of projects that groups in industry come to us with and say, "Can you put a student team on and solve this?" So, I mean, we are guaranteed to be teaching things that are relevant to, at the very least, current engineering practice, but definitely pushing the boundaries into what students will need to know when they go out into the workforce in 5 years.
I think what you and the Swinburne team are really putting together is brilliant, because this project-based learning idea is a big thing nowadays in schools, and you're really emulating, going, you know what, guys, it wasn't because your teachers told you to do it. This is how industry works too, funnily enough. Yeah. That's how you're going to get great. Right. That's really good. I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, well, thanks very much, Tim Smith, for popping onto the podcast. And look, I know it's been flat out with your National Science Week hoo-ha, because you've got to get back to students and research and everything else. I mean, what's coming up in the cards for the next couple of weeks for you?
So we've just started looking at admissions for next year's intake, actually. So Year 12 students, at the time of recording, Year 12 students that are applying through VTAC have been able to preference our course for the last 2 weeks, so we're starting to see some of those trickle in now. If students these days are anything like I was back 15 years ago, university courses probably aren't the top of your mind in August. You're still worrying about your upcoming exams.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're starting to see some of the really keen students by now, which is great. And, you know, just to kind of plug our course a little bit more, we don't look at students' ATAR, so it's a non-ATAR course. It's all done by interview. So if you apply or preference our course, we can actually give you a provisional offer prior to going into your exams, which awesome. Will give lots of students peace of mind.
Cool. And what we'll do is we'll throw that a link to that in the show notes and make sure people can get in touch. And actually, yeah, how can people get in touch with yourself through Swinburne?
Yeah, you can email me at Swinburne. So it's tdsmith@swin.edu.au, or you can find me on Twitter at tim_d_smith.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much, Tim. I know it's been a long road since you went through NYSF, but certainly I can see that 2 weeks really changed your perspective on how things works in the real world of in the scientific community. And hey, now you're driving students to do the same.
I am indeed, yeah.
Right, much appreciated. Have a top afternoon.
You too, man. Thanks very much.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more.
To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Our next alumni from the National Youth Science Forum is Stephanie Twin. She worked at BHP as a geologist originally within the iron ore division, and now she works in business improvement since early 2015. I tell you what, she had an interesting take on what NYSF does when it comes to getting kids prepared for their careers.
Stephanie Twin, thank you very much for joining on the Physics Ed podcast.
Woo, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and especially while you're on holidays, whereabouts are you?
So I'm currently in a small town called Driebergen in Holland, in the Netherlands, and I'm traveling around the country visiting all the family on my dad's side.
Now, you said that really easily.
I've been practicing.
No, thank you very much. Just full disclosure for the listeners, it's 4:15 in the afternoon in Sydney, and it's 8 in the morning right now for you?
Yes.
The day before. No, today. Yeah,
today.
I do a lot of conferencing to people all over the place. I'm used to talking to the US when I do have to do the backward change on the dateline. But of course, you're in Europe
crazy,
right now. Yeah, it starts to break your brain, especially when we allow for how people write dates differently as well. We put date and month and year, but not every country do that, does it?
No, especially the US. They seem to be a bit funny about a lot of things like that.
Hello, all you US listeners there. I hope you're having a great afternoon.
We love you.
Yeah, we do. Actually, I've got a lot of good friends over there. But hey, look, thanks for joining in. Now, the reason we definitely want to get in touch with you is I bumped into some friends from the National Youth Science Forum, and they said, look, you've got to speak with Stephanie. She's got a great story. And so this is why we're here.
Oh, well, I'm glad that someone thinks I'm interesting.
Gosh, nothing like being like set up like that, hey?
Yeah, right.
No worries. Well, look, seriously, it's really interesting for teachers to find out why we're doing this in terms of, you know, throwing kids to a 2-week event with NYSF is one thing, but actually hearing about the impact of that event and where they go afterwards is, to me, interesting. I know that teachers are often asked to us, you know, what are the impacts of these sort of things? And that's why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So when did you do the NYSF time?
I went to the NYSF in 2006, right at the beginning of my final year 12 in school.
Got it. How did you find out about it?
I've been trying to remember this, and I think it was actually a poster that had been put up in the science department of my high school, and it was just a pretty simple poster near the chemistry lab, and I was, let's call it my younger self, a go-getting nerd. So anything that was sciencey and involved going to a university to learn more about science, I was really keen to do. I'd done a few similar shorter programs in Perth, and this national program just sounded like the best thing ever. So I pretty rapidly got onto researching it and figuring out how I could attend.
Well, it's good news that you're actually in a safe place when it comes to geeks and nerds. So we're okay with that on that end. But actually, it's kind of interesting that you actually read the posters. The number of kids who go past all this information that gets put out by teachers is amazing.
Yeah, I don't even know why I was in that space, because I kind of have this memory of looking at the poster, and it wasn't before or after a class when I would have just been walking past it. I think I'd gone back for something that I'd left in the lab, or for some reason I was down that end of the corridor on my own and kind of taking my time, and I saw this poster and thought, ooh.
You had a bit of a sliding doors moment.
Yeah, so it was meant to be, maybe.
Oh, awesome. So what was the time like? So you're in Perth. Did you have to fly across to Canberra, or where'd you end up doing this?
Yeah, so it was in Canberra. This was before they started doing the two NYSF sessions on either side of the country. Mm-hmm. I think they started that a few years after I attended. So everyone was flying into Canberra.
Right. So you joined it because, you wanted to geek out a little bit, wanted to do something a bit different with your with your summer holidays. So you fly on over to Canberra. What did you expect to see?
Well, I knew that it was kind of a bit of a taster for what you could study in science. So I think I was really excited to see what science was like at a university level. I'd known by that stage for a number of years that when I left high school, I was going to pursue science as my, field of study, let's say. But I just didn't really know what that meant in real life and what you could actually study once you got to university. So that's what I was looking forward to most, was getting more of an idea about that.
Did you have a really, like a very clear idea of exactly what type of science you wanted to do, or you just you knew that you wanted to do this area?
I, at the time, was dead set on being an astrophysicist.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I was going to go work at NASA and then go to space, and that was going to be my life plan.
Yeah, life plans can, you can still go there. It could happen one day as well. Actually, yeah. I know that you ended up studying geology, yeah?
I did. In a very roundabout way, it wasn't like I enrolled in a geology major when I started university. I actually enrolled in a physics major because I was still dead set on being an astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. And then I got one semester into a physics major and realized that actually I'm terrible at calculus. And also physics is mostly calculus and that maybe I should look at some alternative options. Geology popped up. I'd taken it as an elective and really enjoyed it.
Well, actually, I'd imagine that skill set is highly valuable when it comes to going out into space and potentially exploring other areas, because the speaking with a friend of mine on a previous podcast, Jackie Slavero, she takes kids from school into Huntsville, Alabama for space camp to meet astronauts and all those type of people. And the number of disciplines that are you know highly regarded by NASA is very, very broad, actually.
Oh, yeah, they love geologists. But I think when I imagined myself working for NASA, it wasn't so much being an astronaut. It was really just looking at the stars and, you know, discovering planets through telescopes and things like that. And for that, you need maths.
Yes, you do need maths. I heard it's a useful tool.
Yes.
It is.
I'm just not that great at it.
That's all right. So you go into the MYSF program for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and what did you get to see?
Well, because I went into the physics stream with NYSF, we basically toured around all the telescopes that they've got out there. So, you know, we went to Parkes and a bunch of the other optical telescopes and to the radio telescopes and all of those sorts of things and all the physics labs that they had at ANU and Canberra University. And I remember seeing, you know, this plasma generator, which blew my mind. And, yeah, it was a really great couple of weeks. But I think what I didn't expect and what I actually enjoyed the most was all the, I don't know, how would you call it, personal development, non-sciencey things.
Oh, they got serious value. I mean, the fact is you had to go interstate as a teenager. You know, you're meeting up with people you don't know, and I'd imagine you'd still be in contact with some of them, yeah?
Yeah, I am still in contact with some of them. And actually one of the girls who was on my session has ended up being one of my very good friends because we ended up at university together afterwards.
That's awesome.
Did you end up actually got a text from her this morning. So
wow, yeah. Did she study the same thing as you?
No, she studied engineering.
Right.
And now she's working for a large oil company and traveling the world. So yeah.
It's funny how that works. So you ended up working for BHP, right?
Yes, I am.
Oh, what do you do there?
I actually work in business improvement.
Interesting.
So not science at all.
Yeah, but understanding fundamentally what you're doing with the resources and how to move them around and everything else, I mean, it's still critical to know.
Well, the interesting thing is, and I've been thinking about this a little bit since reminiscing about the NYSF, is a lot of what they really tried to teach us about there was science communication and the value of that and the value of being able to explain science to people who aren't as interested in it or maybe, you know, to the layman. And that's a lot of what my job is because I actually do business improvement for our planning division, which is essentially all engineers and scientists. It's a bunch of geologists and a bunch of engineers and they do all the technical work and I try to explain it to other people.
So you're like a bridge between disciplines.
A little bit, yeah.
Wow, it must be keep you on your toes on a day-to-day basis, I bet.
Yeah, it's a pretty full-on job, but it's very rewarding.
Oh, cool. So you did your two-week thing and you come back to school. I mean, what was it like? Did you end up explaining this to the the kids knew you went to it. Were your friends interested in what you did?
Yeah. I had a really good bunch of friends in school, actually. So, you know, it wasn't like I came back and everyone was like, oh, you went on nerd camp. Everyone was just like, oh, I wanted to go. And stuff like that. I had a friend who actually applied and got through to one of the stages of selection and then didn't get through. So he was like,
what's the selection process like? Because, I mean, I'm a full disclosure, I've never been through the NYSF program. So what do you actually have to do?
Well, it's fully sponsored by Rotary. So you actually go through the selection process with your Rotary district. So in the case of WA, I think there's only two Rotary districts, and one is kind of halfway through Perth and north through the rest of the state, and the other one is south. So you're kind of competing against half your state to get a spot, and each Rotary district sends, you know, a couple kids or maybe five kids depending on how much budget they have for it.
You're right.
So originally you just send in an application letter and I think a form. Well, this is what it was like when I did it. I assume now you apply online or do something like that. But we had to send in a letter and a form. And then if you move through to the next phase, you do like a group assessment sort of thing. So you all go to this, to a centre, and you do some group activities, and it's almost like a group interview. And then the final stage is an interview with a panel of people from the Rotary District and from NYSF.
So it's fairly grueling.
It's pretty full on. I remember being very nervous in my interview with the panel. And they ask you all sorts of questions about, you know, kind of science current events. So we were talking about climate change and all these things. And so before you go in, you have to research all these, you know, topics that are outside of your field of interest. And, yeah, it was very full on.
And daunting. I mean, like, you know, you're 16 or 17 years old and now you're in front of these people that really know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
That's not unlike our in business, I suppose.
It totally preps you for the real world in that sense, and, you know, at least sounding like you know what you're talking about, even if you don't.
Well, yeah, that's part of the comms side of things, the communication side. Sometimes I get that totally. That's interesting. So that prepped you to be able to go to the camp. You had a great time going to all these different telescopes, and you had a bit of personal journey as well and whatnot. Have you been in, obviously you're in contact with a couple of friends out of it. Do you get called back much to speak with new potential people who are just entering the program or whatnot, or you haven't had a chance at this stage?
I don't normally go into speak to the kids before they go, but when they were running the sessions in Perth, I think they did it for about 5 or so years, I actually was volunteering to help them run the mock interviews. So part of the program, the way they run the program, the first week is all about science, and then the second week is really around, you know, building these, the confidence of the students to become, you know, much better communicators and to present themselves well and to, you know, give them some other skills that are going to give them a competitive edge. So they actually get you to develop a mock CV. So you do up a resume for yourself in 10 years time. So, mm-hmm. you know, me thinking I was going to be an astrophysicist, it had, you know, that I'd studied my bachelor's at UWA and, you know, got an honours and then done a master's and then done a PhD at ANU and then so and so on. And they get you to apply for a fake job. So I went on the NASA website and found a job there and up a cover letter and sent it, you know, gave it to them with my resume. And they get in, you know, people, ex-students from the NYSF, as well as Rotarians, as well as a few other people, professors at the university, to sit and interview you for your fake job. And it's such a valuable experience just in terms of learning how to write a CV, but also in terms of doing an interview and being able to get immediate feedback about it. I actually volunteered doing that for the years that it was running in Perth, and it was such a great experience to go back and participate in it and to kind of help out the program.
That's brilliant. It seems to me that's something high schools across the country and beyond could be doing that in any key learning area. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was such a fantastic experience.
And you wouldn't even have to pull in professors and you know, all the bigwig types. You could have people from the community in any area where they're studying hairdressing, plumbing, whatever. That is really, really valuable, because I'd be struggling to find a single student that will have left high school, have had much more of an interview than going to Macca's. Like, usually something straightforward is an interview, but sitting for a pretend interview in an area that they generally want to do, and if you're trying to extrapolate 10 years ahead, you're going for a real job, right? So that's really, I love that idea. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's... I remember at the time, you know, having a lot of fun with my CV, making up all these fantastic things that I would have done.
Oh, what did you say? What did you say? Do you remember?
Oh, God. I wish I still had it. But, I had a PhD in some really obscure field, you know, some very weird thesis, and I'd worked at, I can't even remember. It was very over the top, though. You know, I would have been.
Well, you're applying for NASA.
If that had been real.
You're applying for NASA. You can't be something small. You got to really nailed it in one area.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the other great things is, you know, going back to what you're saying about finding people from the community to run these interviews, that was one of the, I think, beauties of them having Rotarians running the interviews, because Rotary is really intrinsically linked with the NYSF.
Yeah.
And, you know, you meet Rotarians and, yeah, it's a bunch of old dudes half the time. But hello, Rotarians out there. I'm also a Rotarian. Love you all.
That's all right. I've got to speak with a Rotarian function in a couple of months. They're good people.
Oh, they're lovely. They're fantastic. But, I mean, those rooms are just impressive to be in with the breadth of experience that those people have. It's incredible. So having some of those people who are sitting on, you know, corporate boards, or, you know, their CEOs or their high up management interviewing these kids is incredible.
Yeah, I would love to chat with more NYSF graduates, because I must say, like, just thinking about, you get to see the science in action, you get to meet the scientists and think about your future and all the rest. But that one experience, I mean, sorry if anyone's almost harping on this a little bit, but that one experience to me is gold. Like, it really is. I mean, 30 years from now, weirdly, that would still be in your mind.
Yeah. And like I said, it's those parts of the NYSF that I remember more than the science parts.
It certainly stands out as a highlight to me, for sure.
More than the science parts, because, you know, almost all of my job now is coming from skills that I learned in that second week than from what I learned in the first week doing physics.
It makes you wonder whether you could have some small collegiate schools or within the school itself where they can prep students to be able to get into NYSF or any other accelerator program and sort of emulate this same process. It seems like a great idea. No, it's cool. All right, so wind it forward. You're now, you know, trying to get the business of BHP to boom even further. That must take you around the place. I mean, where has that taken you?
Mostly I travel around Australia. The way BHP is structured, we've kind of got our Australian division, our, America's division, and then oil and gas. Mm-hmm. So I work in the Australian division, so I'm quite often traveling to Brisbane. So I'm based in Perth and I fly to Brisbane about once a month. Also sometimes I haven't headed out to Adelaide yet, but my team does work there. Mm-hmm. And I often actually travel to our work sites, so up into the Pilbara to the iron ore mines, out into central Queensland to the coal mines, all over the shop.
That's interesting. I mean, I've got a friend of mine who worked for the Australian Wheat Board, and he was touring all the grain silos around Australia, and another photo, another grain silo in the middle of anywhere. It's interesting. Yeah. So you're in a similar situation with mines, et cetera.
Yeah, although it's probably similar to grain silos. They kind of all look the same, really. It could be anywhere.
So it sounds to me like there's no way you would have taken back the experience in any way.
Oh, no, not at all.
That's cool. So just imagine you got to stand in front of some teachers and you're there to try and really just get their head around why would they get their students involved. I mean, just that simple question. Imagine the teachers go put their hand and look on, oh, I don't know, Stephanie, we're pretty busy here. Why would we bother plugging this? I mean, what would you have to say for someone being a little bit negative that way, but at least just asking this question straight up, what is the value?
Yeah. Look, I think a lot of kids that are interested in science and love science and want to pursue it, I think even now are still somewhat, I don't know, reluctant to, maybe not reluctant to pursue it, but to talk about it and to be proud of the fact that they love science, because it is still seen as quite nerdy. And when you're in high school, that's the last thing you want to be, is calling attention to yourself for something that you can be teased about. I get that. And I think it's especially so for girls, for young girls. And what you learn at the NYSF is, A, how cool science is, and that's really what it is. You're just spending 2 weeks thinking, oh my God, this is so cool. But it also gives you the skills to be able to talk about science in a way that's constructive, and to share your passion, I think, for science, which is such an important skill for any scientist or engineer to have. I mean, I see it every day at work, scientists and engineers who can't communicate their point, and they're doing fantastic work, but they can't tell anyone about it. So it's such an essential skill, whether you're in industry or in academia, to be able to explain and communicate your passion for science to other people. And if more kids could learn that before they get to university, because they don't teach that to your university, then why wouldn't you send your kids there? Why wouldn't you want your students to you know, be the top of their field just because they can communicate it better than the next person?
Especially when sometimes it can be about pitching to be able to get grant funding or even get seed funding for a potential company.
Yeah, exactly.
No, totally agree. And so just imagine you had a bunch of kids who are seriously, they love their science, they know they're going to be scientists, that's totally going to be their passion, that's their thing. What would be, like, I don't know, just the one simple take-home advice to them if they're, they're in year 12, it's August right now, they're about to finish their HSE, they're about to enter that big bad world out there, what would be your advice to them as they enter their first stages in a scientific career?
I think my advice would be to be flexible. Science is a difficult career to pursue because outside of academia, it can be quite hard to find work and to find work that motivates you and that you're passionate about. So I think my advice would be to be flexible and to be open to new and interesting opportunities, even if they don't sound like they are what you thought you would be doing.
Be interested in everything.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Be curious about everything. That's what a good scientist does. They're curious. So be curious about everything and all opportunities that come your way.
Yeah, I agree totally with that. And look, thank you very much, Daphne. I know you're starting your day. You're over in Holland right now. I mean, what are you getting up to today?
What am I doing today? We're going to go visit an old friend, Frances, and spend some time with her, and then probably tour around the area a bit, look at the sights to see in Dreiberge, which is quite a small town, so probably won't take us all day, but it's very beautiful out here. So I think I'll just be enjoying the sunshine and the scenery.
Well, the weather and the food is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, thank you. Well, I don't want to keep you too much from that, especially when it is in the morning, it is time to go get out and about. And look, much appreciated, and thanks for joining on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No worries, have a great day.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? We love seeing students get excited about science, and you will too. Go to physicseducation.com.au and click on schools for more info.
And if you're still not convinced that student enrichment programs are worth your effort, check out last week's episode with One Giant Leap Australia as I spoke with Jackie Slaviero, who's been taking students into Huntsville, Alabama for space camp.
In my visits to space camp, I've met Charles Bolden, the NASA administrator, and had a nice conversation, not this fleeting shake your hand and nod in a photo, but actually conversations around education and STEM education and jobs of the future. So Emily is going to meet up with all different NASA astronauts, different people who have different jobs. But what Emily's announcement to be our ambassador for One Giant Leap was delivered by an astronaut on stage at her school. So she talks about she hasn't done much yet, but I think shaking hands and standing on stage with an astronaut was pretty amazing start to her ambassadorship.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
Now, there really are so many different ways you can get kids involved in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and especially a number of enrichment programs around. You just got to know where to look. So definitely check out One Giant Leap Australia and certainly National Youth Science Forum. Imagine if what happened if you had the kids go through both programs, which would be really interesting and quite powerful if they got that chance. Hey, next week, different episode. We're speaking with Deb Cook and Jamie Cook from Dissection Connection and Rockhounds up in Gympie. They're putting together a Gympie Bone Museum project, and I tell you what, it's really going to make a difference for their local town. So check out next week's episode. It's certainly a little bit different and well worth our time. Anyway, that brings us to an end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. My name is Ben Newsom, and I really hope you keep on working hard to make science sing in your community and in your school. All the best. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.